the Southland, there's a city way down on the river where the women are very pretty and all the men deliver. They got music, it's always playing, start in the daytime, go all through the night. When you hear that music playing, hear what I'm saying, it make you feel alright. Grab somebody, come on down, bring your paintbrush, we painting the town. Oh, there's some sweetness going round, catch it down in New Orleans.
Hello, ladies and gentlemen, bells and bows. I'm Christian Honoré, and welcome to Part of Your World. And joining me for the very first time is my friend Yvonne. Is it? Okay, in my head I say Yvonne. Is it Yvonne?
It's French, so it's Yvonne.
Yvonne? He's mon ami Yvonne.
Hi, it's Yvonne Boykin. How are you?
Good. Welcome to the world of podcasting.
Thank you.
So, as I always ask with first-time guests, what is your history with specifically traditionally animated Disney films? I know you're more of a Pixar person, but what's your general pitch, general history?
So I'm pretty old, but not quite that old. So I was always fascinated with the Disney movies and then the animations that I'm familiar with. Was Snow White and Sleeping Beauty and things like that. Even though they came out way before I was born, animation just didn't come out as quickly as it does today. Mm-hmm. So I wasn't a big fan. And, you know, we've talked about this before. I wasn't a big fan of Disney in general. I didn't feel like they were inclusive for a very long time. Mm-hmm. And not intentionally, but just as a young child watching cartoons on TV and seeing cartoons try to be more inclusive by incorporating people of all color and backgrounds and cities and things like that, modernizing it. I related more to that. But they really turned around a great deal, and I am re-experiencing Disney. I love a lot of their princess movies are more empowering for the princess. Mm-hmm. And so, and then of course the artwork is just phenomenal. So they have a great team of people that are working from every end. So they're the cream of the crop.
Cool. Had you seen this film before I asked if you wanted to cover this with me?
Yes, I did. It was the first African-American human character that Disney had ever done at the time.
Well, first protagonist. Have you seen Lilo and Stitch?
Yes.
Do you remember Bubbles, Ving Rhames' character?
I'm not really familiar with Lilo and Stitch. It's really hard for me to watch that movie.
Okay.
I've tried so many times.
Okay. It is very weird, but yeah, this, you're right. This is the first one with an African-American,
yes.
I guess with a black protagonist.
Mm-hmm.
I think the fairy tale is pretty well known. I did read yes. the Brothers Grimm version. Basically, a frog retrieves the princess's golden ball from a well, and she eventually kisses him and turns into a prince, and
they live it's
a very
after.
Short. Mm-hmm. Oh, sorry, go ahead.
Yeah, they live happily ever after. It's pretty short.
Yeah, you wouldn't think, just from the bare bones, you wouldn't think you'd be able to support a film. But they did obviously change things around a bit.
Had
this
a
one.
Great twist, yes, yeah. Yes.
It's also based partially on a 2002 novel called The Frog Princess by someone called Edie Baker, but I've not mm-hmm. read that.
Okay.
But that's credited there. And just production history. It's actually cool that you're a Pixar fan coming out to this because, Randy Newman obviously is on for the music and he did like Toy Story. But at this time, the head of the creative head of Disney. I forget the name of his title, but John Lasseter, who's the director of the Toy Story, the first two Toy Story films and Cars, and who is now canceled. He wanted to bring back 2D animation. He brought back John Musker and Ron Clements, who I think are the best Disney directors of all time, because they did Little Mermaid, Aladdin, this, Moana, and they have a long track record. And going to what you said, they brought, this was deliberate, even though it's calling back to a lot of classic Disney movies, they brought back a lot of the talent from the 90s, the quote-unquote Disney Renaissance. Like,
yes.
Andreas Deja, who I think did, I think did Mama Odie. He was, designed, Scar, Jafar, and Gaston, and Hercules, whereas Eric Goldberg, who did Lewis's animation, he was the guy behind the genie. So basically they brought back all their star talent. I don't know if you were following this leading up to the release of it, but there are a lot of elements that got negative feedback from the African American community or media outlets. Initially, Tiana was going to be a servant and her name was Maddie.
I didn't hear that.
Yeah. She was eventually changed into a waitress and a cook. And actually, Oprah Winfrey, who voices her mother, she was actually brought on as a technical consultant on the film. And even though, I mean, a lot of the main people behind the film are white, but another co-writer of it was African-American. And so it was the animator for Dr. Facilier. But and Tiana is also based in part on Leah Chase. Do you know who she is?
No.
So she's a New Orleans-based chef, entrepreneur, and civil rights activist. I think she's now passed. She's the queen of Creole cuisine. I think she has a chain of restaurants there. And you've actually been to New Orleans, right?
I was just going to say, it's one of the other reasons why I love this movie is because I've been to New Orleans, started before my son was born and he's 17. And then we took him, it was his first airplane ride and he was about 3 or 4 weeks before his first birthday.
Oh, wow.
Yeah. And we went probably for the first, I'd say, 7 or 8 years of his life every year.
Oh, wow. Excellent. I've never been there before, but seeing an aspect of this film or the way it presents New Orleans makes me want to visit it, especially the food.
Yeah, it's got a great energy, and everything the movie touches on is what New Orleans is known for. And to take the magic of the fable and the magic of Disney and to place it in such a magical town as New Orleans, with not only good magic but bad magic or voodoo, what some people would say is bad magic, is really, really interesting. So
cool. And they decided to set in New Orleans just because so many fairy tales were set in Europe.
Yes.
And because they thought New Orleans had a magical quality to it as well. And this is very much a love letter to it. Have you seen the Simpsons? This is my attention. Have you seen the Simpsons episode with the streetcar named Desire musical?
No, I have not. That's probably very interesting too. Yeah, have seen the originals. Streetcar Named Desire.
Okay.
With Marlon Brando.
Okay, I'll have to send you that episode. It's an episode of a streetcar called Marge. Basically, Marge is in this terrible musical adaptation of A Streetcar Called Desire, where it's they have this song at the beginning making fun of New Orleans, New Orleans, home of pirates, crooks and whores, New Orleans. This is sort of the polar opposite of that.
Yes, that is true too.
I don't have much other trivia other than that they actually brought on a choreographer and some dancers to base some of the characters dancing on, especially Mama Odie and Dr. Facilier.
The movements.
Yeah. And they've done that before, but I think on Snow White, they had for example, a guy with a fake nose dresses the witch, who they base the witch's movements on, and people like to inform the dances of the dwarves. But I don't know if they've done that. I don't know if they've carried that over into their 3D animated films or even their the Renaissance. But anything else before we get into the story and the synopsis?
No, I really can't recall much trivia that I have about it. Unfortunately, I was just very excited for it to come out and excited to see it.
Oh, did you see it in theaters?
Yes.
Oh, cool. I didn't because I was kind of feeling, oh, am I too old to see this? But in college, like everybody, well, we saw it through informal means, like that's what college students did at the time. and I saw it and really enjoyed it.
Where y'all going?
To find somebody to break this spell.
What spell?
Brace yourself, my scaly friend. We are not frogs. We are humans.
Y'all serious?
I am Naveen, Prince of Maldonia. And she is Tiana, the waitress.
Do not kiss her.
Now just a second. This goon here got himself turned into a frog by a voodoo man, and now...
Voodoo? Like the kind Mama Odie do?
Mama Hootie?
Mama Odie. She the voodoo queen of the bayou. She got magic and spells. All kind of hoodoo.
Could you take us to her?
Through the deepest, darkest part of the bayou, facing razor-sharp prickly bushes and trappers and hunters with guns? No.
This film starts... Well, obviously, New Orleans. We see this wishing star surrounded by what turned out to be fireflies, and we sort of pan in on this castle-like manor with Tiana's mother Eudora reading *Princess and the Frog* to her daughter Tiana and Tiana's little white friend Charlotte, who is like dressed as a princess. And Tiana swears she'd never kiss a frog, whereas Charlotte is much more enthusiastic about it, and they torment like the kitty for a while. And the father comes home, and like, it's kind of established that this is kind of improbable. We'll get to like the elephant in the room soon. Tiana has like one of her friends is this rich white girl who's spoiled, but is somehow not hateable just because she's so crazy. But
yeah, she has a good heart, so she is spoiled. Do we ever know what happened to her mother?
No, I...
There's never any reference to that, is there?
No, it wouldn't really contribute to the plot.
But it might indicate why she's not spoiled in the sense of ruined. She is spoiled, meaning she's entitled and she has a lot of things, but she seems to have a really good heart. So what I recall is Tiana's mother is head of the home for this tycoon.
Yeah, and... I think she's like a seamstress or like a tailor for like working for him.
Yes, she makes dresses. But I thought she was working at the home in general.
Okay.
But you might be correct that she might be a seamstress, and I just remember that, but. Because Tiana's over there a lot, I figured that she probably was more involved in the home in the day-to-day activities. So maybe that's where I got that impression.
Maybe. And basically they go home and it is set in – actually, if you look in the tram car, you see that someone has a newspaper up in – it says Wilson wins the presidency, so it's November 1912, if you think about it.
Yes.
But this gets to the elephant in the room. The fact that this is set, so this is a fairy tale, so it's like a squeaky clean, like perfect thing. This is a fantasy, and yet it's also happening in Jim Crow New Orleans, where, like sometimes on Earth 2, we talk about, like, if this in a film with no movie, like, say, in Star Wars, if they shoot down the probe with the droids, there's no movie. The whole, nothing in this film happens if, like, Jim Crow racial politics at the time was in place in the movie. But
right, if you focused on those things, absolutely.
But, yeah. But what do you think of that element of the film, the racial politics?
I mean, there was definitely an element of separation between the groups, and you're not sure if it's the haves and the have-nots, because there's never any reference. But the fact that the prince himself is, I don't know where, what he's supposed to be, but he's a little darker. He's as dark as a paper bag, which is always the line with colorism in the African-American community. But they are still considered black. But I think that they do ignore a lot of that. They just ignore a lot of it. I think it has to happen that way in order for the film to be completely enjoyed.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, it is kind of enough paradox is the right word. It's kind of like a damned if you do, damned if you don't. I went over it already. I'm going in circles. There's a few hints of like inequality. Like that, if you notice on the tram, they're actually I noticed that Tiana and her mother, and I think a few other African American passengers, there's towards the back, so you could infer that the tram is segregated. And as they're like approaching the house, like the neighborhoods become like,
oh yeah,
less luxurious,
right? And they're run down. Run down.
And actually, something with the realtors later. I think there may be some racism and sexism there, but in the context of the movie, not like on the part of the film. But
But the other thing is that there were communities, especially in New Orleans, where there wasn't so much of the color lines or the color barriers. Okay. There were communities that within the community you could interact, as you saw in the movie, but in other parts of the South and other parts of the world, it wasn't so much like that. And kids are growing up, they're often not informed of what's going on as far as socially or historically. They again paint this picture that it's okay for now, but when they get older, they'll need to know their place, or they'll need to understand. Where she was looking, I think it was still in a community that was predominantly served by blacks. I think it was okay.
Where she was looking, do you mean where she was looking to open the restaurant?
Yes.
Oh, okay.
So it wouldn't be a problem. And it was pretty normal for whites to be able to go to certain areas of town, not for people who had a reputation, but maybe some of the children, some of the rowdier black sheep of the family would go and mingle among other, of the servants and the wait staff and things like that. That wasn't unusual. You have to remember that's exactly what Elvis Presley did. He went to church and he went to bars and halls and all speakeasies and all kinds of things that were predominantly African American.
Okay. Yeah, I don't know the details about like how bad Jim Crow was in New Orleans versus rural Alabama or other parts of the South. Mm-hmm. But I know Plessy versus Ferguson, the Supreme Court decision that Brown versus Board of Education overturned. For non-American listeners, that's the case that overturned legal segregation. I know that Plessy versus Ferguson originated in New Orleans, so I wonder if it might actually be extra stringent there, depending on the time, but that makes sense. They go home, we meet her dad, Terrence Howard, and he plans to build it, open a restaurant, basically to unite people from all walks of life. She helps makes this super gumbo that the whole neighborhood enjoys, and sort of like plants a seed of her talents and trajectory. And like before she goes to bed, she sees the wishing star, and this is somewhat of Actually, the original When You Wish Upon the Star song actually references this, but her father says that old star can only take you so far, only part of the way. Like, not lose sight of what's important. Which she actually does, because she later. But the point
what
is
it, what do they call that in stories when you say a statement that is actually the thing that's going to happen?
Not foreshadowing, but
It might be a foreshadowing.
I guess of a sort.
He definitely had this line that alluded to, you know, what actually happens. So yeah, that she loses sight.
I think the inference is that, or the way she takes it is that you need like hard work to get you there, which is true to an extent, but what he's really referring to is love and
And family.
Sport. But she when she looks out at the star, it's not here where she says please, please, please. That's later when she's an adult, right? But she sees a frog on the windowsill and she screams at it, and I love that it basically croaks back in horror. It's just afraid of.
Yes.
We have a few of those in this film. But anyway, we get the opening credits. Flash forward 15-ish years later in the same room. Tiana, like now in her 20s, is coming home from a night shift and putting her tips and overtime money into a bunch of metal cans. I don't remember what they are. There's a photo of her dad in an army uniform wearing a medal. Or he's not wearing a medal. Is he wearing a medal, or is there one by the... basically, the inference is I think he died. He's dead, and either he died in World War One or died afterwards.
He died in service.
Okay.
The medal, I think, was a Purple Heart, and it was an indication that he died in duty, in service to the United States. So this would put us in the 1920s. And we're talking about the Roaring Twenties,
jazz age.
Jazz and just, having so much, too much, you know, that you just, you have more than enough.
We actually see her taking a very brief nap because she has both a night shift and a day shift at a different cafe. And she goes on the tram as like the doc. What do you think of the Dr. John song? Or just the Down in New Orleans song?
Love it.
Cool.
It's, you know, the music makes the movie, and New Orleans has such a mix of jazz, some rock or rhythm and blues, and then, of course, the Creole or Zydeco music. So it's such a rich culture. Like I said, this is the best scene or the best location for this movie, because it just has so much. New Orleans is known for flavor in the music, flavor in the food, flavor in the attitudes. It's just such a great vibe.
Cool. I've known Dr. John before this, and I like the songs. His songs in general. He actually did a really good cover of Cruella de Vil, which is better than the one in the movie. But the tram goes to, I guess it's the French Quarter. And we actually see Dr. Facilier there telling fortunes on the street. There's a balding man who visits him. I think a balding white man, and so he blows some growth powder into his hair, which basically turns him into a Wookiee or a werewolf, scaring off the woman.
Be careful what you ask for.
Exactly. But unfortunately, he only makes a quarter from this, whereas he sees this newsboy who gets like a big fat wad of dollars from Lottie's dad, John Goodman. And establishing his powers, we see his shadow move independently of him, a la Peter Pan.
Yes.
basically quickly establishing who the baddie's going to be and like what he's bitter about. But at Duke's Cafe, the newspaper advertises that the Prince of the totally real country of Maldonia is coming to New Orleans that day.
There is a real country?
No, I was joking.
Oh, okay.
So the actor is Brazilian. So mm-hmm. And I know actually Brazil. Well, so
they speak mind, Portuguese.
Sorry, mm-hmm. Go ahead.
They speak Portuguese.
Yeah, it's sort of like I think it's fake Portuguese, or like
in Brazil. You mean or the actor?
No, I think the movie. It's like a sort of fake Portuguese Eastern European sounding language.
Oh yeah, I have no idea what it is. It's not any language. Even when he speaks in his language, there's no words I'm familiar with.
Yeah, Gifaji Bruto isn't the Frog Prince in Portuguese, I'm pretty sure. I know Brazil was actually a monarchy until the 1800s. So mm-hmm. maybe this is like an official universe where the monarchy continued maybe that's where he's around the area he's from. But anyway, he's in town. He spoons surrounded by swooning girls, his ukulele. He joins like this local jazz band.
He's definitely a playboy.
Yeah. Whereas his poor, portly servant, Lawrence, has to tote around all his luggage.
Mm-hmm.
And the prince actually ends up passing and eyeing up Tiana, but she is not interested in him at all.
Right.
She's too busy with her job. The chef there is kind of a douchebag. He sort of scoffs at her dream of like getting her own place. Whereas her friend, she does have friends there, but she's like too busy to. She doesn't really have much of a life outside of work.
Right, she's working too hard, missing exactly. out on the big picture.
Yeah, and she's closing in on getting the money she needs to
because she thinks it will make her dad proud and her happy.
Yeah.
Right.
Yeah. Thank you. But Mr. LaBeouf, the sort of default king of the de facto king of the town, he is hosting the prince. They're holding a masquerade party. Mm-hmm. And he's been elected the king of the Mardi Gras parade. So I think that Mardi Gras is in, was it March or February?
Mardi Gras is Fat Tuesday, and it's so many days before whenever Easter is determined that year.
Mm-hmm.
But okay. So it's the Tuesday before Ash Wednesday, and it's Fat Tuesday because after Ash Wednesday, then you start Lent. Right?
Yeah.
Right, and there's so much you're supposed to give up, so they go a little crazy mm-hmm. in New Orleans. I heard that if that wasn't created in New Orleans, I understand it was created the ideal of indulging before Ash Wednesday was actually created somewhere else.
Possibly France, because, I mean, it's French for Fat Tuesday.
But remember, Louisiana was owned by the French.
Yeah, exactly.
So they, a lot of, the and Creole is a mix of French, Spanish, English. But a lot of people there do still speak French.
Cool. Not like Parisian French, like a dialect?
There's Creole, but then there's people. Cajun. There's a lot of people that are descendants of the French. So there's a lot of things that – a lot of streets are written in French, the French language, a lot of references. Like the French Quarter is actually there's another name for it. Shoot, I cannot remember. And, of course, the famous line that New Orleans is known for is let the good times roll, the big easy. Mm-hmm.
Yeah.
Yeah.
So Lottie is there with her dad, and he gets like this, a bunch of beignets, which look amazing, by the way. Do they taste good?
They are amazing. They are French donuts, and yes, it's all the rage. That in chicory coffee you would get from Café du Monde.
Oh, amazing. Mm-hmm. Anyway, Charlotte's crazy about it. She's very eccentric, but she basically is super excited about it, and I guess by mm-hmm. the prospect of p- potentially marrying this prince, and she actually hires Tiana to make about 500 beignets for the party. Over her dad's, well, not really over his objections, because he's still spoiling her, even though he doesn't look too happy about her throwing around his money. But anyway, this money is enough to basically, Tiana enough to finally buy her restaurant. And all this is overheard by Dr. Facilier, who's apparently a patron there. I also like the reaction from the chef. Like his jaw drops open and the egg that he has holding, it's on the order up bell. But anyway, she buys this abandoned sugar mill, I think by the river, but from the Fenner brothers, who we'll get to a bit later. She offers to sign the paperwork at the masquerade party that night, because they're going to be there. She's there with her mom, who wants Tiana to get hitched, but Tiana's already married to her work, and we get her, sort of I Want song, which is almost there. And basically, it becomes very stylized. It's based on an artist called Aaron Douglas. I only looked up a few things by him. It didn't resemble it that quickly, but it has a very sleek, 20s vibe to it, nonetheless.
Yes.
And there's a very visually impressive scene. What do you think of the song? And
I have heard it performed many times. I went on a cruise, and there was one night where it was the Princess and the Frog dinner, and they had a whole thing. And at the end, they played the song with live musicians, and we paraded around the room. It was really fun. The music is fun. It's repetitive, and she's got an amazing voice, the actual actress.
Oh yeah.
But the ability to be able to sing it, they were very smart to make it singable for anyone. And so the actual instruments that are played are, just very nostalgic and reminiscent of that type of music and of New Orleans. So the washboards and the piano.
That's right. The banjo. Mm-hmm.
Yep. Yeah. So even to this day, if you were to go into New Orleans, you would find a few groups of people that play that music particularly. Of course, Bourbon Street is the most popular street known around the world, but the locals actually go to places like Frenchman Street and Magazine Street. And then that's where you'll hear local performers playing music, not for tourists, but for themselves.
Oh, cool. And we should say Tiana is both voiced and sung by Annika Nonni Rose, who I think is most famous for Dreamgirls. She's one of the Tajir girls, along with Beyonce and Jennifer Hudson.
Yes.
She does a great job all around. Anyway, back at the French Quarter, the prince is still gallivanting around with the jazz musicians while Lawrence is turning his luggage, and he reminds the prince why he's there. He's either there to get a job or get hitched, because he's broke or he's been cut off. There's a dance. Lawrence gets his head stuck in the tuba, and Dr. Facilier now descends upon them, and he finally speaks, and it turns out it's Keith motherfucking David, who... Are you familiar with him from other movies or other things?
I cannot think of it just by name, but I have an ideal of who it is. Mm-hmm. Yes, I knew it was him. Yes.
Yeah, I know him mainly as a voice actor. He's
I've watched him in TV and films all my life. He's a pro. Yes, and I mean, they drew his character perfectly, and I just brought up a picture of him, and his smile, his teeth, everything is absolutely perfect. So, yeah, this is the guy.
Yeah.
But, I mean, it's similar to the tycoon also. He's very, what is his name, John?
John Goodman.
Goodman, yeah. Very easy to see that's John Goodman, and... These voices are known, and the character, the facial expressions and everything are known. So for me, this guy is very known. I would have, I mean, I knew that was him from the start.
Yeah. And he, I think he is one of the last, like, great Disney villains.
And again, not saying that Voodoo is bad, but he does reference that, that he's also related to royalty? Because he's the son of the Queen of Voodoo.
Really? There's a brief line, but is that a reference to somebody in particular?
Yes. Of course, I can't think of the name, but she has a shop on Bourbon Street.
Okay.
And she was around at that time, so. Let me see what her name is.
Okay, I know very little about Voodoo other than from this film.
Marie Laveau.
Oh, okay. I don't know if this is true or not, but I heard early on his name was Dr. Duvalier, but they changed that because that was actually the name of two dictators in Haiti. First, Papa Doc, and then Baby Doc Duvalier.
Wow. Yes.
That would have been gutsy. I love his design and love Keith David's voice. And apparently he's based both on, basically he's the black love child of Captain Hook and Cruella de Vil, because he has sort of like the big chin and that, but like Cruella's physique, because he's like super real thin.
Thin, yes. Yes.
Yeah.
I'm pretty sure he was a dancer.
Yeah. But anyway, he descends on the prince and Lawrence and basically walks them into their voodoo shop and basically says, I wager that I'm in the company of visiting royalty. And like after like reading his palm, and Lawrence says, or this morning's newspaper, because he sees it in his pocket, and basically mm-hmm. says he's a charlatan. But then Dr. Duvalier rounds to them and tells them he's got friends on the other side, and thus begins my favorite scene of the film, or my favorite song. He basically brings them into his dark parlor, which is actually very, I don't know if you've seen this film recently, it's actually quite similar to Ursula's song in terms of what's going on, because he's mm-hmm. tricking the protagonist into this really bad deal.
The transformation, yes, yeah. After a promise.
Yeah, and he's also forging this alliance with Lawrence in order to get what he wants. But he basically, I'll probably play a clip of the song later, but he gives both of them a tarot reading. This is a great way of playing across exposition, but basically he knows that Naveen is a prince, but his funds are low and he's there to get hitched. And he says that it's the green that you need. And when you're looking to the future, it's the green that I see. And if you look closely at the tarot card that he gives him, it's like the prince, like with a banjo, like against this green. There's actually a lily pad behind him. There's mm-hmm. like all these dollars, but the dollars are in the shape of a lily pad.
Mm-hmm.
So
he's referencing, yeah, that he's green as in a frog.
Yeah, it's a nice bit of foreshadowing and sleight of hand. But mm-hmm. but he also gives Lawrence's one, his prophecy, which at first isn't very promising. He basically says, you've been pushed around all your life, but in your future, I'm quoting verbatim, is the UIC is exactly the man you've always wanted to be. So the three men shake on it, and then all this crazy voodoo shit happens. Like the little dolls come alive, and there are these masks earlier that sort of echo behind me who say,
yes, yeah, on
the other side, which is really eerie and creepy.
Mm-hmm.
Anyway, the song, like the music speeds up, the song becomes more sinister. Naveen's blood is taken by like this talisman. He's tied to a chair with these snakes, and we don't see what the transformation is that he undergoes, but by Lawrence's reaction, you know, it's pretty horrific. And I love there's a sort of rainbow effect on Dr. Facilier's face. He puts on this skull mask. I think he's also based in part on Baron Sabadie, who is a voodoo god or being, who wears a mask like that. And basically, the song is about be careful what you wish for. I've been gushing about it, but what do you think of the song? Like any like details about voodoo that I wouldn't know about?
I could listen to that song over and over. And I think I have played it over and over and over. It is amazing. It's one of my two favorite songs from the movie.
Ooh,
Yeah. And I mean, it's, again, it's everything you love about jazz. It's everything you love about New Orleans. Mm-hmm. It just has, it has such a mix. And then the thing I love the most are the, I believe it's the drums, mm-hmm. and the, what do they call that? Call in and refrain, or
like the "Are you ready?"
Yes, yeah. It's used. It's pretty popular in Black culture. It's very popular in church. Mm-hmm. I think it's called call and refrain, mm-hmm. Where someone leads you. And then you come back with the music and the drums connecting to the history of voodoo being an ancient African religion that was brought over. And so it whispers back to that in that music.
Hmm. Cool. I love this scene so much for like lots of reasons. We should probably move on, otherwise we're going to be stuck here forever. But this is my favorite song in the movie, and even if you have no interest in this movie, you have to see this scene, like on YouTube. Not just listen to the song, but like see what's happening. And I should mention, I mentioned a shout before. It's like in the background doing all these things independently, like pulling up a chair for Dr. Facilier, and like being like very snake-like at the in places.
So, and the shadow.
Then we go to the masquerade ball, and there's some pretty cool costumes. And like including the dog, like dressed as the Roman Legion. Charlotte's being courted by a guy dressed as a jester. And she says, when a lady says later, she means not ever. Tiana's there with the beignets, but the prince is nowhere to be seen, and Lottie's going crazy about it. The prince seems to arrive, and Charlotte perks up a bit. Or I keep saying Charlotte, Lottie, it's the same person. We get this waltz that she has with him, and what I think is reanimated or like done from the same angles from either Cinderella or Sleeping Beauty. I know they were homaging one of them. And I love the look on Lottie's face, like when she looks at Tiana and like says, "Look at me, I'm dancing with the prince." Like it's in like a very, it's not in like a vain way. It's like in a very like, "Oh my god, I can't believe I'm doing this."
Yeah. Again, you would expect that she would, she could be one thing, but she is very much not.
But then, Tiana is approached by a pantomime horse, which turns out to be the Feather Brothers, and they inform her that she was outbid by a fellow who paid in cash. So I wonder if this is a fan theory, but I wonder if this is actually a lie and just an excuse not to give it to, not to give it to someone who A is a woman and B is black. Cause they bring up her background in air quotes.
I believe if I'm not, I really do believe that that was part of the doctor's plan, that he created do you remember that?
Because he was in the background when all this was happening, so he could have engineered this.
Yeah, I remember that there's some point where there's almost a vision of it happening where someone comes and gives them all this money, and it's almost trance-like with them accepting it. And so he's created this, created this facade that someone is taking, has given the money. Huh. I could have sworn there's something in the movie that references that.
He shows her like a scene later, like when like shows her like the possibility of her restaurant being successful. And he was like in the background when she was being given the money. But I wonder, I sort of see them as like I took this as actually evidence of a depiction of racism within the film. Like, basically these two white guys refusing to sell this property to someone because she's a black woman. I put in my notes, maybe it could be wrong with this, but I wonder if they actually didn't refund her deposit either, and not only rejected her, but fleeced her. But if they mentioned a guy paying in cash, then maybe she hadn't put down her deposit yet.
Yeah, I don't think that she gave any money yet.
Okay. But even so, it would be a crushing blow to have, like, be, well, as she says, almost there.
Mm-hmm.
But Lottie, she picks up on Tiana being crestfallen. She ends up falling in the tray of beignets, like, after, like, trying to get a hold of one of the one who's at the ass end of the pantomime horse. But
one of the loan officers.
Yeah. Maybe they go back up to the mansion. Like, Lottie gets her the sparkling blue, basically a Disney princess dress, because that's what it is. She picks up on Tiana being crestfallen, but at the same time, she's so elated that about dancing with Naveen that she didn't fully she's too elated about to investigate what's wrong with her friend or what's bothering her friend.
Mm-hmm.
So, which isn't perfect, but it, I guess it's oblivious. Like, when you're walking on air, you don't really want to, you're not really in the mood to hear your friend's problems. But anyway, Charlotte goes back to the party. There's a reprise of Almost There, that Tiana sings, and she looks up at the star, and she said, well, before she says, I can't believe I'm doing this. Please, 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 just as like young Lottie did earlier. And Lottie even says something to her, like, oh, I thought about wishing the stars was for babies. But anyway, she sees on the balcony a green frog, and she looks up at the heavens and says, very funny. And it says, I suppose you want a kiss. And the frog says in this very lecherous voice, kissing would be nice. And it turns out, well, you all know how this is going to go.
Mm-hmm.
It turns out that's the real Naveen. Whereas fake Naveen, we'll get to it in a bit, is Lawrence in disguise. He's squashed by the children's book of the frog prince. but he recognizes the story and suggests that she kiss him, offering her, perhaps there's some reward I can offer you. And basically she needs, basically, well, I'm getting tongue tied.
At that point, did he know he was a frog?
Yeah.
He had seen an image of himself.
He knew who was a frog. He said that, he says later, but it's her that has the transformation reaction in a bit.
Right. But I remember also that when he asked her for a kiss, he wasn't looking to be transformed. He was just a player. Taking advantage of the situation.
I think both are true. I think he wants to be transformed back into a handsome prince, but he wouldn't mind snogging this attractive young woman either.
Mm-hmm.
He saw her earlier and he was interested.
Yeah. But I think initially he just happened to say, maybe, I could give you a kiss or something.
Yeah.
A kiss would be nice is what he says.
Yeah. He convinces her, well, if you kiss me, maybe I can get back to being a prince and then I can reward you in some way. Like, basically, and she's thinking about her restaurant, and initially she's grossed out by it. Maybe spray some perfume into his mouth. She kisses him. There's like a big green glow or explosion. The kiss ends up not returning the prince to human form, but turning Tiana into a frog. And I took track of this. This is at 29 minutes and 50 seconds. There was some criticism of this film, like having Tiana being mostly a frog through it, not unreasonably. But anyway, they have basically a little fight with each other. End up landing on the outside in the party, and the band is struck up when they're on the drums, and one of the frogs goes up Lottie's dress. And did you pick up on the Streetcar Named Desire reference?
No. I rely on the kindness of strangers.
No, the tycoon, he's dressed as Julius Caesar, a Roman. He calls Stella.
And
it turns out Stella is the dog, and he says, "Stella, get them frogs." And
I miss that. Yes.
Yeah,
remember that, but I didn't think of it as Streetcar Named Desire, or that he had a dog named Stella.
Yeah. Because earlier the Stella's trying to eat the beignets, and Tiana's like, "No, Stella, they're not for you."
Yes, I did not connect that.
Yeah. Something I forgot is that actually Stella recognizes Tiana as a frog, because because he called out her name, and so I was like, "Tiana?" And anyway, there's a big mess. The Fenners get covered in cake, which is the least they deserve. And the frogs end up tied up in some of the balloons, and the escape is witnessed by Dr. Facilier, who's kind of dresses. He's in a mix between a Napoleon and a Harlequin-esque costume, but he is not happy. So, he goes to Naveen. Turns out fake Naveen is Lawrence, and he let the prince escape, or the prince frog escape. And actually, I noticed, I think on the second viewing, that fake Naveen or Lawrence in disguise, he has blue eyes instead of the prince's hazel or brown ones. Lawrence's voice is like very camp and lispy. He lamented being up, like tangled up in this voodoo madness. The shadow trips over fake Naveen, who's wearing a talisman around his neck that allows him to maintain the disguise. It turns out he's in cahoot. The deal is that fake Naveen will marry Lottie, and he and Dr. Facilier will split the fortune 60-40 in the doc's favor. So we get into I don't know if we mentioned why he wants. I think he just wants the money just for power at this point, but we get later into what he's going to do with it. But we go to the bayou, like Tiana and the two frogs are on a balloon, like it's raining outside. Tiana, it turns out, knows about Dr. Facilier, Shadow Man, which is interesting because it seems like they have something of a history, but he's more of an antagonist for Naveen than her. It's not a huge missed opportunity, but it would be interesting if we knew a bit more about their history, or if she just knew him by reputation. First rule of New Orleans, don't make deals with the Shadow Man. and do interrupt me if you have like any thoughts about the scenes or anything I missed or anything you want to bring up.
No. I think most of it seems to be filmed in the bayou.
Yeah, we're getting to, I think like the second act is mainly in the bayou.
I think that's where it really, really where the story itself takes place in the, so I'm waiting for that.
Okay. Anyway, Naveen is angry that Tiana's not a princess, and she's angry that, I think it's here that she finds out that he's basically broke.
And he brought this situation on that she's in on him. On her and himself.
And eventually the balloon pops, they land in the swamp, and they're nearly eaten by a catfish, and then this terrifying heron, basically they're dealing with the reality of being frogs. Like, they're still arguing, but then in the pond, and at one point, hang on, why are these logs moving? And it turns out they're alligators that approach him. One of them, I didn't pick up on his voice, but apparently one of them is voiced by Emeril Lagasse.
Oh, really?
Yeah. But I didn't. I don't know his voice well enough to pick up on him. But
I do. I know it pretty well.
Yeah. But anyway, they hide in a log so that the alligators can't get to them. And off screen, Naveen tries to get comfortable with Tiana, but she presumably kicks him in the frog balls.
Yes.
Gonads.
He has not won her over yet.
Yeah. They basically wake up next morning, sun's out. basically they're determined to get back to New Orleans, but the prince is still a lazy layabout. He just like, are they on a leaf or they're on some sort of Ersatz paddle boat where she's doing all the paddling, but he makes this little guitar and there's this gator.
I thought it was like a pod, some kind of, it's something organic that they've made into a boat.
It's not that important ultimately, but anyway, they're floating down, but there's this big menacing alligator comes back behind them. It's jaws open. And then he says, I know that tune, because it turns out it's Lewis, this jazz loving gator.
Mm-hmm.
I love Lewis. I think he's a very underrated Disney sidekick.
Yes.
He and Naveen bond over their love of jazz. They're a Dippermouth Blues, which is apparently a real tune. It's like in the credits, they, you know, at the end of a movie, they like they bring out all this, they show like the songs and the writers.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah. And Naveen asked him, why haven't you tried playing jazz with people? And he said, oh, I tried once. I love this little flashback with Lewis, like, going on a riverboat, like, sneaking up, playing a trumpet, and having this very, like, hopeful look. And then, oh, he had to jump off, though, because people keep shooting at him.
Yes.
And it didn't end well. Anyway, he tells them... Basically, he learns that they were human and turned into frogs, and he tells them about Mama Odie, who is the voodoo queen of the swamp.
Mm-hmm.
And they ask him to take her there, and I don't know what he says verbatim, but basically he says, really through hunter-infested swamps and prickle bushes and all that, then he says, very deadpan, no. but basically they... It's like the Wizard of Oz say, if you go with us, maybe she can grant your wish as well.
Mm-hmm.
And then we get When We're Human. What do you think of this song?
That's okay.
Okay.
I'm not really. I prefer. Yeah, it was. It's okay.
Okay. It's very brief. It did remind. I'm sure it's like based more closely on jazz songs, but it did remind me of Bare Necessities and Places.
Mm-hmm.
And the water animation is particularly good, with like Lewis like going through the swamp. By the way, back at the tycoon's at Lottie's manor or house, fake Naveen slash Lawrence is chatting her up, and but the blood on like the frog blood and the talisman he's wearing is starting to run out to Mao, and his fat and pallor is returning to his body. Whereas like. He's able to evade Lottie's notice somehow because she runs off to do something else. But basically, I mean, it's here. I will say the plot gets a little overcomplicated here because it turns out Lawrence and Facilier need Naveen's blood in order to keep the charade up.
Yes.
And it turns out the doc and Doc Facilier, he says that he has to ask for help from his friends on the other side. We'll get into that a bit later. I don't know if this is part of how voodoo works, where you make some sort of deal with the spirits in order for spells or your wishes to come true. But do you know anything about that? Or
I mean, I don't really, really know. I just know that you can pray to any particular spiritual power. Mm-hmm. Some of them are good and some of them are evil. It's the basis of evil eye, which is really common, where you can be jealous of someone's good and, you know, be so jealous that you wish them evil.
Mm-hmm.
And I, you know, it's people would say it's just all magic. Mm-hmm. And it all has a price. But it's supposed to be completely different than if you're praying to a benevolent God, yeah. Versus a maleficent power.
Mm-hmm.
So the you know, there's always a catch. There's always, and I mean, ultimately what their goal is to gather as many souls mm-hmm. to the other side as possible.
Yeah.
Misery loves company, I guess.
Yeah. And I think Dr. Fazer, he mentions like something like fun fact about voodoo. I don't know any magic myself, but he gets it from the spirits or from the, mm-hmm. the friends on the other side. Anyway, back in the bayou, the frog, I think it's evening then, the frog, they're lost. The frogs tried, or at least Naveen is like getting used to being a frog. He tries to catch like some flies.
Flies.
Including a firefly, but they eventually get literally tongue-tied, and Lewis makes things worse. So he said, goes off to fetch a sharp stick, but the firefly comes over to help them. Ray, the Cajun firefly, and I like Ray also. And getting to voice acting, he's voiced by Jim Cummings, who, if you've seen any cartoon from the 90s onward or any Disney film, you've heard him at some point. Like he's currently the voice actor for Winnie the Pooh and Tigger, and has like a bunch of voices in Aladdin and Lion King and Hercules. And this is one of his favorite roles, apparently, because he has, from what I can tell, he does a very good Cajun accent or very.
Yeah, it's amazing. It was amazing.
Yeah, and he's one of the best like voice actors in general. But he's somebody who plays like background characters. But I love that this film like gave him as prominent a role rather than like giving it to like a celebrity. And it turns out Lewis has been taking them in a wrong direction.
Yes.
I love this moment when he says, "What kind of chucklehead would take you here?" And then Lewis emerges like, "I found a stick." Just so he looks even dumb. He just looks so dumb. But anyway, he and the fireflies take them literally down the bayou. And you said this was Zydeco? This is based on
Zydeco
the...
music?
Yeah.
Zydeco is a type of, it's a type of Creole music.
Yeah. Basically these thousands, if not millions of fireflies, like Ray's relatives, take them in the right direction to Mama Odie. It's an okay song. It's kind of like the other one, just very quick. Just get.
Yeah, dig a little deeper. I don't really care for that one. That's on the line of gospel music. But the song,
isn't getting ahead. Isn't Mama Odie's a bit more gospel like?
Yes. Well, she's a voodoo queen. Mm-hmm. She's not a Christian.
We'll get to it. There's some church like image. The choir in there might be of.
Right. Churches. Well, the music itself, this genre is gospel.
Yeah.
For that period of time, but we're missing the "Gonna Take You There."
Yeah, that's what I was referring to.
That's Zydeco.
Right.
And then
there's a few scenes before Mama Odie. There's we go back to Dr. Facilier. It turns out he plans to kill Daddy LaBeouf, the tycoon, and basically take over New Orleans, like to provide the voodoo spirits or demons, like for souls to feast on. And in return, the spirits agree to help find the Frog Prince. And he's basically talking to these masks that are representing the voodoo gods or beings. And I like they never speak, but like the head one, like the Supreme Court, the Supreme Justice or whatever of them. He like looks at each of them, like basically to see if they assent, and they assent to it. And they raise these shadow demons, which look really good, look really creepy and cool. They swarm all around New Orleans, and some of them go up the river towards the bayou. So the stakes are ramping up. We go to the Ray's coming through them to the swamp. There's actually an homage to Peter Pan because you see him through the leaf because there's a scene with Tinkerbell where you see her like, glowing behind a leaf. But Lewis panics because he's covered in prickles. These three stooge-like frog hunters descend upon them.
Those guys are definitely Creole. They live in the swamp area. They're not the smartest.
No, especially not the big one.
Yes. The father and the two sons.
Yeah. But around this time, Tiana is like basically calling out. I don't remember the full context of it, but she's calling out Naveen on his royal and I think to some extent, or white or at least pale privilege. I don't remember what exactly they're talking about. Maybe he's just talking about what he'll do when he's human again. Basically, both the frogs are eventually captured. Ray tries to rescue them by flying up the hunter's nose, but that doesn't work out. But I'm going through it very quickly so we can get to other scenes. But basically, it's a case of whack a frog. Naveen hops around so that in such a way that the hunters end up injuring each other, and then Tiana joins in also, so like to screw around with them. It turns out they sort of bond over tormenting these frog hunters, and one of whom is shot near the balls and has hard underwear. One of them says, "These frogs are different. They're smart." And they say, "And we talk." Well, Tiana says, "And we talk too." Yeah. And then they flee. So
she says that.
Yeah, it's a nice comedy scene.
And isn't it the first time she actually just lets down her guard?
Yeah, so they finally lower the defenses and start to bond over something. I think he points out, so you do like to have fun.
Right. Yes.
So they're back with the sidekicks. Tiana basically knows how to make swamp gumbo for like mushrooms and like other various, I don't know, swamp spices. Do you know, I've never had gumbo. Do you want to talk about that or bring that up?
Gumbo, yeah. Gumbo is the African word for okra. Mm-hmm. And so the dish is made with an okra base. Mm-hmm. And then, of course, rice and basically anything you can find, you throw in there. And being in New Orleans, you have access to shrimp, oysters, clams, mussels. Apparently
lots of Tabasco sauce.
It can be spicy. It varies. But this is more tomato-based okra soup with some protein. The andouille sausage is pretty common too. Mm-hmm. But yeah, it's one of those things that most people in New Orleans has their own recipe for and is passed along, and it's very it's prized by the family.
Mm-hmm. And Tiana, like, is, well, we said this is a show. Tiana like makes this sort of super gumbo that she learned from her father,
right?
And but
she perfects,
she's able to make this presumably vegetarian like form, like for them as frogs, and the prince learns to mince mushrooms, although he's very bad at it. And we kind of learn here that because everything was given to him, he's kind of, doesn't really know. Okay. I was going to be nicer, but that's not inaccurate. He has no skills.
Right.
Tiana's like basically the only reason, well, Tiana and Ray are the only reason they've gone this far, but, and it's around here that Evangeline is around here, right? When we learn who Ray's girlfriend is.
It turns out
it's the wishing star, but,
The North Star, right?
I don't know if it's the North Star specifically. I just call it the wishing star because it's like the one in Pinocchio.
I thought it was the North Star because it was the brightest star in the sky. Mm-hmm. And so they snicker. Because they know it as the North Star.
Yeah, Lewis snickers, but I think Tiana and or Naveen just says, "Don't tell him. Just let him live out the dream."
Right.
Mm-hmm. And he has a song about Evangeline because that's what he calls a star, and it's here Tiana and Naveen really thaw, and like he have a skill, which is dancing, because he teaches her how to dance, and there's this nice.
Teaches her how to. The other part of life, the balance. Mm-hmm. He teaches her about balancing work with play and love and family.
They get close, but they stop short of kissing because Naveen is still sort of kind of promised to Lottie, because he says, I'll marry Lottie in order to, like, because he marries Lottie for the money, but he also does it to help finance and, like, repay her. But meanwhile, the shadow spirits have found one of the pop balloons in the swamp, and they are able to follow it and track down the frogs. They snatch Naveen, but they're actually destroyed by a torch from the shadowy figure in the fog. It looks like it's this, almost like this giant with a club, and it turns out it's this tiny, blind, nearly 200-year-old voodoo lady.
yes.
Whoop.
Is played by Jennifer Lewis.
Yeah, this is the main thing I know her from, but I know that's not her real voice, but she's amazing. But what else is she in?
Oh, so we can go all the way back, but the most recent would be she's the grandmother in Blackish.
Okay.
And she was in The Wizard of Oz. The Wiz. Sorry, okay. The Wiz.
On stage or in the movie with Michael Jackson?
The movie, but also I don't know if she was on stage. I just don't know. But she definitely was in a movie. She's a renowned dancer, singer, you know, full entertainer. So, yeah.
She has a very good old lady voice. She's very eccentric, kind of Yoda-like. You think, like, maybe she's a little insane.
Oh, yeah, because she's blind.
Yeah. But she has a house. Her house is a boat in a tree, and she knows Ray, and Ray mentions about his grandmother flashing the neighbors. And she has a pet snake called Juju and, like, other eccentricities. And I love Lewis's line. Are you sure this is the right blind voodoo lady who lives in the boat in the tree in the bayou? At first, it's humoring them, but then gets to business, and she has her own gumbo pot, which is sort of like since she's a witch, it's basically her version of a cauldron. And we get to her song. Dig a little deeper. What do you think of this one?
That's the one that we were talking about earlier, being a gospel song and the call and refrain type of music. It's okay.
Okay.
It's all right. It's not very catchy for me. It seems like it's a little strained. I love the animation and the you know what's going on, but the actual song I'm not really crazy about.
Okay, I like it. I think it's very catchy. And as somebody who isn't religious, I think it's the one sort of gospel song I can get on with because it's not religious, but it's very much like.
I have to introduce you to some more gospel music.
Okay. I don't know. Honestly,
gospel music is not about religion.
No.
It is about the music.
Okay.
And you can make gospel music. You can make a song, any song, into a gospel song. Just ask John Legend and John Batiste.
Okay. You have to send me some songs. My musical horizons, I'm aware, are very narrow.
Yes, I recall.
Yeah. But anyway, although she has this choir of spoonbills, that's because that's the kind of stork they are. We go throughout her house is his ship, I mentioned how it's very not only is it gospel like in terms of the song and the choir, but there are these sort of glowing bottles that she has that, like, as the song climaxes, it look and like the light is filtering in. It's very much the way it's framed. It's very much like a cathedral's like stained glass window. Basically, she says you have to find like dig a little deeper. You have to find
that. Yeah, dig a little deeper.
Yeah.
Beyond the shallow, but beyond what you think is important.
Yeah. But it turns out neither of them get it. I do like this twist. Like he says, she has, do you understand, Tiana? And she's like, yes, I'm going to work even harder for my restaurant. And everyone like sort of groans.
Yes.
and Ray tries to restart the song. And although Naveen, I think, I don't know if he quite gets it yet, but in the song they point out, she points out money didn't make you happy now. It won't make you happy now because it didn't make you happy then.
Right.
But anyway, she goes to business. Basically, she says, again, it gets a little convoluted here, but basically what has to happen is Naveen has to be kissed by a princess before before midnight strikes on Mardi Gras night, Cinderella. And Lottie technically counts as the princess because she's the princess of the Mardi Gras since her father's the king. There's actually a vision of like her being given the crown by her father. And Lewis actually contributes some. Like Lewis wants to be a human also, but she says no. You have to stay an alligator. You don't need, being a human won't. She doesn't say it as much, but being human won't solve it. But he does get an idea, like for them to get there on time, and they board a steamboat. And Lewis, luckily, he's mistaken as a man in costume by a bunch of other bandmates dressed as animals.
Yes.
So his wishes are starting to come true also. And Naveen is now, I think at this point, I have in my notes, is now in love with Tiana and wants to like impress her in some way with Ray as his wingman. Just getting ahead, what do you think of the romance between them and the pace of it?
I think it was really realistic.
Okay.
She never lost sight of her goal until he started to change. And also he opened up about that he's not really a playboy. He just wasn't, you know, he was kind of spoiled. He was not allowed to be anything more. And his sincerity, I think, wins her over. Mm-hmm. And then, of course, there's obviously chemistry. Mm-hmm. So, but yeah, I definitely like the pace. She's still not completely head over heels, but she's invested and he is already there. So,
okay. I mean, I know I'm talking about Disney romances. I know this is not given nearly as much time or writing.
I know. Like, I mean, we're talking about somebody falls in love one night at a ball. So,
yeah, I think it's even for Disney, I found it to be a little too quick or a little too, I mean, maybe it happens quicker than I imagined it would, or like, people fall in love or lust or attraction, or whatever, quicker than I can imagine. But I think one of the reasons why the romance and Beauty and the Beast works for me is because it happens over several months, whereas this happens over like less than 48 hours.
What are you comparing it to?
Beauty and the Beast, you know, the romance between Beast and Belle.
Oh, yeah.
So there's plenty of time for them to like, or at least more time for them to develop.
Right.
Whereas this is like, if this had been like over just 1 week or a few weeks before Mardi Gras, maybe
yeah,
I would be able to buy it a little
it
better.
Seems like just a few days.
Yeah.
I think the other thing is that, you know, particularly with Beauty and the Beast, he was beastly, terrifying. He was going to keep her father and not let anybody know that he was gone or missing. And he loses control and he can be very scary at times. So I think that would take more time.
But
with this, there isn't any of the fear of each other, and they are both frogs.
Okay, so it'll be easier for maybe, well, I'm thinking this is such a male point of view, but you think it would be easier for a relationship to develop between Naveen and Tiana in general than Beast and Belle because of that makes some sense.
I think if Tiana had a moment to even pay attention, he is charming, he's attractive, so I think she would be able to, but she's so focused on not being distracted. And she was kind of a, you know, like you said, she had friends, but she wasn't going out. She wasn't doing anything. And he kind of forced her to take some time.
Okay. Fair enough. Anyway, Naveen is in love with Tiana. At first, Ray thinks that he's like talking about Evangeline and gets like really pissed off. But mm-hmm. Ray learns the truth and wants her to be his wingman. And basically, he has this rooftop dinner prepared for them as frogs. I think, I don't know what food he made, but apparently he upped his mincing game. mincing as in like chopping stuff. And
right. Mm-hmm.
He's like super. This is a bit weird. He says he's been with hundreds, if not thousands, of women, but maybe because he actually cares for her, maybe that's why he's messing up or is like overthinking it, because he like is like very clumsy and is like embarrassed. It's
that's the impression. Mm-hmm. Yeah. And because he knows that she's not impressed by his looks or his riches, mm-hmm. or a presumption of riches or his title.
Yeah. But they're having basically this date, and as they're approaching New Orleans, and there's additional stress on Tiana's end because she has to pay for her new place. She has to return to human form and pay for her new place by the next day. She has to, mm-hmm. upbeat the bid of the other guy, whoever he was.
Right.
And of course, this is Tuesday because it's Mardi Gras, so the next day is a Wednesday. And Naveen promises to make Tiana's dream come true as they arrive in New Orleans. There's a near kiss, but it doesn't happen. Naveen's about to round up Ray and Lewis, like for them to like, you know, get down to business. But he's again nabbed by one of the shadow minions, and he's brought back to Facilier and Lawrence. And his blood is drawn by the talisman. This isn't something. Hopefully I haven't ruined the scene for you, but there is a minor animation error with Facilier because he's missing his mustache in the scene briefly. Amelie's mustache is like very thin, like it's basically like a thin black line, but he's briefly missing it in the scene where Frog Naveen is returned to him. And basically it's the night of the Mardi Gras. Did you notice what was on one of the floats, or who was on one of the floats?
I don't recall.
Okay, think another another Disney character. That's not narrowing it down at all. Okay, I'll say it. There's a King Triton float.
Oh, okay. No, I kind of am forgetting about the whole float scene.
Okay. Basically, there's this. I don't know how far back like big floats like that go on, but there's this. It's a Mardi Gras parade. There's this big King Triton float, or Poseidon float, if you prefer.
Okay.
And these guys dressed in fish costumes, two of whom are actually based on the directors, Ron Clements and John Musker, because they actually, something they have in their films is like extras based visually on themselves. But that's I referenced that in previous episodes. I'll send over a picture later. But
I'll have to look at that.
But basically, like one of them is basically a thin, a gray-haired man with a little mustache. The other one is a shorter one with like an orange beard and mustache. Anyway, on the biggest, like gaudiest sort of, there's a sort of wedding cake with Lottie and fake Naveen about to be married by a priest, along with the father is giving away the bride. So the marriage is happening on the float. And Tiana sees this. She doesn't know about Lawrence. Naveen never mentioned to her that Lawrence was masquerading as him, which actually would have been useful. But she retreats to the cemetery because she feels betrayed. Is there a notable cemetery within New Orleans?
Yes, they're all raised because the sea level is so high. Mm-hmm. So they can't dig. So there are all these mausoleums. But there's There's a famous one in the Garden District, mm-hmm. that's just outside, and then there's a few others that are pretty popular that they do tours around. But the one that I recall is in the Garden District,
okay,
which is just a streetcar from the French Quarter.
Okay, I figured it was like a famous cemetery that people visit, because actually in Buenos Aires, there's a very famous cemetery called La Recoleta Cemetery. It's very similar. It's basically a city of mausoleums, but in this case, it's because there's a lot of like rich families, including Eva Perón's mausoleum is there, although it's actually very difficult to find. Like I studied abroad in Buenos Aires for, I actually lived a few blocks from there, and I went to the cemetery a few times, and I'm not joking when it is like a city of like mausoleums, but there's always like roses at her tomb because she's like a folk saint.
Nice.
But anyway, the Chalnarachitza Cemetery, whereas Naveen, the real Naveen, Frog Naveen, is in a wooden chest, and the Dr. Facilier is looking on, I think, from the cathedral, and he's about to impale a voodoo doll of Lottie's dad with a pin, but Ray...
Okay, so there is a famous cathedral, and it's right in front of Jackson Square, and there is a small cemetery there behind it.
Oh, okay.
So that's where Dr. Facilier is first seen. He's on that street. There's across the street from that, on the corner, is a store of oddities.
Okay.
So yeah, so I think that must be what they're referring to. So yeah, that's where it's situated. It's right behind the cathedral, which is I can't remember if there's an actual name, but in New Orleans you just call it the cathedral, and then it's in front of Jackson Square, and it's a pretty famous one. You've seen it in some of my pictures when it's very beautiful. The whole area is white, and then the top of it is almost like castle-like with the turrets on the top. Is that what it's called? Turrets with almost like a flag at the cones? Yeah. Go ahead.
I figured it was based on an actual cathedral rather than just a generic church.
Yeah.
I don't know, whatever it's the city's equivalent of Notre Dame is.
Yes.
So, but anyway, Ray frees Naveen from the box. Like, he serves as a lock picker, which is nice. And he knocks the fake prince from the float. Like, Lawrence retreats into the church where Facilier is, and Ray grabs the talisman. Lewis, like, by the way, is with the jazz band, but he goes off to rescue his friends. But to do so, he has to reveal his true self to his bandmates, and he scares away the crowd because he's a scary alligator. But they're in the cemetery, and Ray has a talisman, and Dr. Facilier, like, very callously crushes him. Well, there's a little squelching noise. We'll get to that later, but Ray's been been taken out of the picture. Tiana now has the talisman. She's, like, confronting Dr. Facilier. She threatens to break the talisman into 1,000 pieces. And pulling the curtain back, I have notes, like, based on plot. I have it in chapters, and I call this chapter The Last Temptation of Tiana. I don't know.
Because he offers, this is where he offers her a deal.
Yeah, I don't know the full story or my Bible that well, but I know there's a story of Satan tempting Jesus, like, on the mountain.
Temptation of Christ.
Yeah, exactly. But shows her the restaurant, like, lots of people there. There's a banjo player who looks like Naveen from the back, but is not. He shows her these flashbacks, like, with, like, showing her, like, all the sacrifices she made and her naysayers, like, from the restaurant. She mentions her dad about how, like, tired and beaten he was, like, every day when he came home from work. But I don't know how he would know about that, or I don't know if that was just, like, the African-American experience at the time, or if he had a dad like that. But he brings that up at a certain point, and he gets very close to convincing her. He even says she's almost there. which almost does it for her, but she says, "My dad never got what he wanted, but he had what he needed." She rejects it. So she's, during this whole this whole scene, she's turned into human form again. But she's refrogged, as I put it, in the notion mm-hmm. term. And he's about to squash her, but she grabs the talisman with her tongue, breaks it, which basically voids the deal that she has with the voodoo gods, and they emerge from all throughout the cemetery, yes. and they literally drag him to hell and petrify him.
They come for what is due.
Yeah.
Yes.
And there's a reprise of like the whole end of his song, which is...
Yes. Are you ready?
Yeah. And he's not ready because he has plans, but it's too little too late for him. And we even see Ersat's tombstone of him, like his face in horror, as it says, Dr. Facilier. So he's dead.
Yes.
Quite an amazing scene. They even drag his shadow, I guess, to... Is there a hell in voodooism, or is there like a...
Yeah.
Punishment?
Yeah, but you have to remember that all of the religions become mixed mm-hmm. with... So Santeria is a mix of voodoo with Catholicism.
Oh, okay.
And... Yes, so Catholicism is the religion in Louisiana brought by the French or the Spanish, and then it's mixed with the voodoo. So
yeah, I figured that might be the case, but that's how I'm calling it. He's dragged to hell.
Yeah, he's definitely dragged to hell. Yeah. Yes.
Anyway, back at the cathedral, Lawrence is back in his usual form, and there's again a mutual scream. Like Lottie is horrified at his appearance, and apparently he's horrified by her. But and Naveen reveals himself to Lottie, and he's squashed with the book with a Bible this time. Whereas Lawrence is thrown into a paddy wagon, and she agrees to kiss. I think off screen she explains the situation to him, and she agrees to kiss him, and the frogs are reunited, and I think she says to him, my dream wouldn't be complete without you in it. And mm-hmm. the sort of love music swells as they're confessing their love to each other. And, but the clock strikes 12. Lottie kisses him multiple times, but it doesn't seem to work. So despite the villain dying, it seems all is lost. And mm-hmm. Ray is dying, and what any thoughts about Ray's death or like the or leading up to his funeral?
I don't have any thoughts. I mean, of course it's sad, and you fall in love with that character, and there's just nothing but good and honesty coming from him, and he's the one who brings focus mm-hmm. to all of the craziness that's going on. So yeah, it's really sweet. And I think it's fitting he sacrificed, but then at the same time, it's the only way that he's going to ever be able to be with his Evangeline again.
Yeah. And I think I appreciate the gutsiness of it. I think this is the first Disney sidekick to die.
Obviously,
Bambi's mom died, and Mufasa died, and this isn't as pivotal of a plot or as strong as this, but I do.
No, like that the parents dying is always a Disney thing, as my son told me. Because when he lost his father, he was watching a remake of Cinderella, and it was the. Human version, the live version. Mm-hmm. And he, just came to me and he was crying and he was upset. And he's like, why do all Disney movies have someone, a parent who dies? So that's pretty typical. But then to lose, like you said, the sidekick, the person that comes along and helps you transform into the person that you're supposed to be, as in, the Lion King would be a host of characters, but I guess it would be Nyla, right?
Well, not Nala because she's the love interest, but if Timon or Pumbaa died, or if
Well, Rafiki, Timon and Pumbaa were not the best.
No, they took him a little far, too far in the wrong direction.
So it's Nyla who comes back and says, remember who you are.
Okay.
Yeah, I think it's Nyla in that one. Yeah. I would love to blame it. I mean, the only thing that Timon and Pumbaa did was make him understand how important family is.
I guess to some extent. Anyway, we're backtracking or getting off track.
So we were talking about the death of Rey.
Yeah, we get this this funeral basically in the swamp with all the fireflies, and I like the touch of Lewis like sort of playing the funeral trumpet.
I don't know
if it's specifically a New Orleans thing, but I think it's a thing. Oh yes,
and it's usually done with joy.
Yeah.
So you have
Anyway, it's raining and it's foggy, like everyone's very sad, and then the clouds part, and there's a new light in the sky next to Evangeline, and there's much rejoicing because his dream has come true, basically, because he's with her. And then we actually get two weddings. There's the Bayou wedding.
Wait a minute.
Oh, go ahead.
Did you cry at that moment? Did you tear up?
I've never cried when that happened, but it is emotional, and it is.
Yeah.
I like that they took that chance, like that they show that, because they reference and homage like a lot of other Disney films in that, but this is something that is, I don't think hasn't been done before or since. Like, I can't think of even like another funeral scene in a Disney film. When Baloo quote unquote dies. Turns out is playing dead.
Right. It's always that. It's always someone appears to be dead, or they're just sleeping, or they need a kiss, or they need, you know, the cure. But yeah, no one actually officially. But no, I definitely teared up. That was very moving. I mean, he was just a great character.
Yeah. But anyway, that hope is he's with Evangeline, so like we do get a happy ending, even when they're gone. The frogs, there's a wedding in the bayou, which I think the willows or something like that are framed a bit like a bit like the eaves of a church, if I remember correctly. But Mama Odie is like conducting the wedding there, and they kiss, and the frogs are made human again. And this is an hour and 27 minutes in. So Tiana's been a frog for nearly an hour, in a 100-minute movie. I'm not saying that specifically as a complaint, but that I did keep time for this. So
yeah, I'm sure there are people who were very bothered by that.
Mm-hmm.
But I think it was significant that she be a frog, because otherwise it would just be like a short. It would be a 15 or 20 minute story of this girl realizing that she, or of the typical story of her kissing a frog, which is the old ideal of the prince coming and rescuing.
Mm-hmm.
Right. And so they definitely changed it by her going through this transformation too.
Yeah. And she wouldn't be able to reach the necessary point if she had stayed human. And I will say, two things. A, Naveen is a frog longer than she is. Not by much, but he's not as important. But
let me just put it this way. I have lots of nieces and great nieces that love Tiana, and the story of Tiana, and the fact that Disney took this lead. And they always dress up as Tiana. They never want to be a frog. It's very clear that she is a Disney princess.
Yeah. And I haven't seen this film in a while. I don't think this is, and I'm not like slamming this film, but I think Soul is worse in this aspect, the Pixar film. have you seen that?
Yes, and we love that movie.
Okay, so I won't say anything
else. He's a piano player. Come on. He plays jazz.
But did he have to be a cat through, like, the last half of it?
But it's Tina Fey.
Oh, that's a whole different issue.
But wasn't there that whole period of, I don't look that deeply into things. Then we'd have to talk about the genie, and there's so many different movies where we never complain about Shaggy D.A., which is what I grew up with, and how long the main character was a dog.
Okay, I'm not familiar with. Is that a cartoon or a movie? Or
oh no, it's a movie. It's a Disney movie, and he switches places with the house dog, which is it's some kind of shepherd. It's just gigantic and shaggy. Whatever the dog is in Beethoven.
Oh, it's a Saint Bernard.
Oh no! It's not a Saint Bernard. It's a
Mastiff?
Some kind of shepherd. No. Wrong with that one. With Beethoven. It doesn't matter, but Shaggy D.A., Shaggy was a huge, gigantic mop of a dog. Beautiful dog. But this guy played his character, played the character, and nobody was timing it. I understand that people want change, and sometimes when they see things, especially my people, obviously I'm African American, and they expect... they want to see change, and they seem to want all or nothing. Mm-hmm. And sometimes when they don't get what they think is all or nothing, they're not satisfied. And I think that sometimes a fish is just a fish. It doesn't mean anything else. Okay. It's not implying anything. It's not. Again, I think they did a really good job with the times and the atmosphere of New Orleans and the interactions. And yeah, there was definitely a separation of cultures and races, but it wasn't to the point of being rude or disrespectful. They just didn't have to show that at that level.
Okay. I just knew I had to bring it up because I know it was a point of contention for some people. The idea of Black erasure, but
yes.
Anyway, Tiana marrying a prince makes her a princess, and Naveen kissing a princess turns him back into human. Like she even said, I'm just going out. She even says, "You just kissed yourself a princess." So
yes.
Then there's the wedding in the actual church with Lottie and her dad and Tiana's mom, as well as Naveen's, like the king and the queen of his kingdom, and his younger brother who dances with Lottie. Again, this would never happen in 1920s New Orleans, like because of interracial marriage being banned.
What race is he?
there's that. He's potentially a fictional ethnic group, and maybe an exception could be made for a former foreign royalty. I don't know. And
this is something that's very known about New Orleans is there is the group that's called Mulatto. And it is very common. It was considered a separate race. When you look at the census, you have Negro, white, and mulatto. Mm-hmm. And then they didn't even count the Native Americans or the indigenous people until I believe it was the 1920s. And they are identified as Indian.
And I also learned recently they used to count all people of Indian descent or people from the Sun continent. They were counted as Hindu in the U.S., even if they were Sikh or Muslim or whatever.
Oh, the actual Indians from India.
Yeah, but the census just called them Hindu.
Yeah.
So, anyway, we go to Tiana's future place, the Sugar Mill, and I love this. Lewis scares the Fenner brothers into giving them the key. So they're fine. Those douchebags are setting their pace. Tiana's place is touched up, and Lewis gets to play the horn there. They're doing the Charleston. They live happily ever after until the Great Depression. I mean, I'm I don't know if that happens, but I couldn't help thinking that towards the end.
Yeah.
Not a complaint. It's just a little nagging adult thought in my mind.
But they're a restaurant. I'm sure she took a little of her business and made it a soup kitchen as she continued to serve the patrons that did not lose everything in the stock market. Also, you have to remember that the foods that are made from Creole and French foods that are made are oddly enough made from the cheapest products. The sandwiches are called po' boys.
Oh, that's right.
Because they were given to the workers on the river and so forth, and they were given to the poor boys, and it was basically a piece of Italian roll and lettuce, tomato, and then some fried oysters or shrimp, alligator. So the ingredients, rice was pretty common, you know, that rice originated, the slaves took care of the rice fields in the South. And so rice was pretty common. And then, you know, everything else as expensive as things are here, like shrimp and French food and certain cuisines, actually the making of the items back in the early 20s would not have been, a problem.
Okay. Anyway, the film ends, there's the credits, which do look nice. I like some of the animation there, but I was not that crazy about the song at the end by Neo. I forget what it was called, but meh, whatever. But final overall thoughts on this film, Yvonne?
So I love it. There's something about the green and the colors of the dress. It looks great on people of color. So anytime we're paying homage to the film, the first film that represents us, you know, we love the colors, and the time period is beautiful. You know, it's an upcoming age of jazz. Mm-hmm. And again, I love where it's I can't think of that word, you know, where it's set, the setting. Mm-hmm. So I love that. And of course, New Orleans, I'm going to take you to New Orleans. We just look at a date, not too hot, cause I don't want you to melt, or burn, but it is really a great place that you can go there pretty inexpensively and, taste some of the best food that you could ever imagine that's influenced by cultures all around the world. So how they put it together, the cleverness of, you know, of the ending, you know, when you first see it, it's just like, oh, and then after that, you're just like, you know, the ending, but it's still a great movie because of the music, the artistry. It just gets better, and you know, at that time in 2009 was the best. The colors and everything were just amazing. Mm-hmm. So my favorite scene definitely is the first scene in the cemetery with Dr. Facilier. Mm-hmm. and all of those colors and the almost psychedelic.
Sorry, you mean in his emporium, the Voodoo Emporium?
Oh yeah. Yes. Okay.
Because he has a shop, but the same voodoo spirits or gods appear both there in the cemetery. Yeah.
And again, I'm wondering if they're referring to the oddity store that's right on the corner, that's adjacent to the cemetery that's behind, and it's St. Louis Cathedral.
Okay.
Yeah.
Cool.
So anyway.
Overall, I really like it. It's a lot of fun, and it has a lot of elements of the best animated Disney films, like as great protagonists and sidekicks and a lot of great songs. I think this is the best music that Randy Newman has ever done for a film. Like, I think he's good as a composer also, but some of his songs, well, this sounds cool. I'm glad he didn't sing any of his songs, to be frank. they were on Dr. John and the great voice cast, and has a phenomenal villain, and it's possibly one of the funniest Disney films, animated, Pixar or otherwise, and easily one of the best animated all around. It makes you want to go to New Orleans, even though it's a very like lovey-dovey portrayal of it, and even though it's in the 20s. And I love that it brings in a lot of fairy tale aspects and subverts them, but not in like a sort of cynical, dirty way like Shrek. Like the prince, like the prince is a bum, and kissing the frog actually makes things worse, and the fairy godmother doesn't solve everything, etc.
yes.
I mean, there's a few little things that hold it back, like the plot being a little overcomplicated with Dr. Facilier, and I'm sure there's some easy fix for it, just so he, where he wasn't beholden to them. And I'm a little, you did sort of talk me around, win me around on the speed of the relationship between the two. And
thank you.
Yeah, the sanitization of history is a little disturbing, but it's not near. This is not saying much, but it's not as nearly as egregious as Pocahontas, because that was based on a real story and real events.
Mm-hmm. So
a fairy tale, like set in a different era.
Yes.
So it doesn't necessarily, there isn't as much of an obligation to be as true to that aspect of things. And,
yeah.
And if you look closely, there's a few elements, at least of inequality, maybe not
right
segregation or racism, but I mentioned like the trolley car and the Thunder Brothers. And it also really saddens me that this didn't do better financially, and that this is one of the very last 2D animated Disney films. Like, this is sort of a false dawn for Disney animation. This is only the second to last one. It was mainly well received, even with like some of the criticisms before. It was financially successful, but it wasn't as successful as they hoped or needed it to be. And actually, the week after it, Avatar came out, which would have blown it out of the water. And I've heard they also this film's performance also influenced the decision to rename the Rapunzel film Tangled, because they were worried about, like, this is kind of sexist, but thinking that people are worrying that male audiences other than male audiences wouldn't want to see films that had princess in the title. It was nominated for Best Animated Film and also Best Song for both Almost There and Down in New Orleans, but it came home empty-handed. And it also lost Best Animated Picture to Up, which...
Wow.
You're talking about
Pixar.
Yeah. And it lost Best Song to something from Crazy Heart, but I've never seen that film, and I don't know. My favorite song of the film is "Friends on the Other Side," but I don't know if they always like choose like the love songs or the fun songs for things like that. You don't,
yeah.
I don't know why that they're afraid of like showing villain songs or more edgy songs like that. But whatever. There are several spinoffs planned. I think there is supposed to be a Disney Plus series at some point. But I think the most famous legacy of this, other than being the second to last traditionally animated Disney film, is the fact that the song that Splash Mountain is going to be turned into a Tiana themed ride, or
Tiana's
Bayou Adventure. So
nice. And,
yeah, that's nice, because Splash Mountain is based on Song of the South.
Okay.
So, and you know about that movie, I trust?
A little bit, yeah.
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 And like I said, there is like a, I think, some sort of sequel series to be on Disney Plus, but the release date keeps getting pushed back. So who knows if that will ever materialize. And as far as I know, and I hope this doesn't happen, there are no plans for a live action adaptation. So curse be their name. So anything else you want to bring up about the film before we grade it out of 5?
Just that there was a little bit of what I would say it dragged just a hair, or what you said. There was a lot of different components from the time that they land in the bayou to the time that they leave the bayou. Mm-hmm. remember I was saying that it seemed like the movie took a lot of the movie took place at that time. Mm-hmm. And so sometimes when I'm watching it, I forget that they're not out of it yet, that they still have to do this and they still have to meet Ray and they still have to interact with those, the son and the sons and the father, and they, and then they still have to meet Mama Odie. So mm-hmm. it, you know, when I think about that, I think, wow, that's a lot of stuff going on, and it's not a short time. There's like a song for almost every part of it. So yeah, I think they could have edited a little bit better.
Okay. There. Yeah. I guess the second act, if the first act is starting in New Orleans and the second act is the Bayou and the end act is Mardi Gras, I guess the second act is the most bloated of the three.
Mm-hmm.
So out of five, Yvonne, what do you give The Princess and the Frog?
Well, considering all of what we talked about, I would have to say that I give it a 4. Mm-hmm. Because I really did love the movie. I love the fact that it, you know, it was a first in a lot of ways and one that I didn't know about with Ray. But the animation, the colors, that was just amazing. And, you know, I didn't say this before, but they did animate people of color correctly.
Mm, okay.
So in some movies, it's kind of like that doesn't look right, or that's not right coloring, or that's not how the shadow would hit. And you don't notice those things. You know, I don't think other people notice those things, but people of color notice those things. Mm-hmm. And they use people that were actually of different complexions and dark complexions. So that was so I give it a 4 because of the music, because of the animation, the artistic drawings, the colors. And then the twist at the end, definitely.
Cool. I also give it a 4, but a very strong 4. Like this is, mm-hmm. I love this film, but there's like little things that hold it back, or like little things that have to say, like you have to suspend your, you have to turn parts of your brain off like mm-hmm. when it comes to like the historical period. But overall, it's a lot of fun, and I would definitely see it again. And I do want to go to New Orleans based on it.
What? Oh no. No, no, no. There is no way I'm kissing a frog and eating a bug on the same day. Ah! No, no, no.
Hello.
Wait, stop moving.
You are making this very difficult.
Y'all find anything to eat yet?
Oh, my.
Hang on. Old Lewis got it covered.
No, no. No, no, no. Yeah.
How's that?
This could be a little better.
You know what this needs? A sharp stick. Be right back.
This is all your fault.
My fault. My fault. Let me tell you something. I was having a wonderful time.
Well, look at here. Ooh, girl, I guess you and your boyfriend got a little carried away. Am I right?
Oh, no,
ridiculous.
This is not my boyfriend.
I am the Prince of Mazzola.
Uh-huh. Let me shine a little light on the situation. You mean? One more time now. That's no better yet. Oh, it's okay, baby. I don't explode me. I ain't no firecracker. I just got my big butt glowing, that's right. Ooh, women like a man with a big back pouch. Ooh, no, you done this up real good for sure. Now, where did it go to, Ed?
Yeah.
Hang on, Cap. I'm just going to give a little switch. Getting to know each other now. Brown fishing time. By the time I introduce myself, my name Raymond, but if I call me Ray.
Pardon me, but your accent, it's funny, no?
Okay, Jim Brock. Born and bred in the bayou. Y'all must be new around here, huh?
Actually, we are from a place far, far away from this world.
Go to bed. Y'all from Shreveport?
No. We are people.
Prince Charming here got himself turned into a frog by a voodoo witch doctor.
Well, there you go.
And we were on our way to Mama Odie's. We think maybe
Mama Odie?
Mm-hmm.
Y'all head the wrong direction, O'Shea. Now, what kind of chucklehead told y'all to go this way?
I found a stick!
Louis? Ray here says you've been taking us in the wrong direction.
I was confused by the topography and the geography and the choreography. And
first rule to buy, you never take direction from a gator.
Normally, like before announcing the next episode, I'd ask if you have like anything to promote, but you're not on any other podcasts. But is there anything you wanted to bring up or hell, anything about anything New Orleans? Any New Orleans related recommendations?
I think you are due a real trip to New Orleans, and I think because I know you normally travel alone, but I would suggest that you take a few days to have me guide you around New Orleans.
Yes, I would love that.
Yep, I think it needs to be done when it's not hurricane season.
Okay.
And when it's not in the middle of summer, because it is it's unbearable for most, and I know for you it would be tragic.
So, I tan better than my dad, but even so.
Yeah. So, but yeah, if you're interested in the food, the music, you know, it has changed, unfortunately, because of the epidemic of opioids.
Oh.
Yes. Because New Orleans is one of those places where people can live on the street for long periods of time. Mm-hmm. They don't have the cold, the freezing weather, the overnight, things like that. Mm-hmm. And there has been an uprise or an uptick of crime because of the drug addiction. So we've seen that, unfortunately, of heroin and the pills. So that has changed a little bit of it, but you know, hopefully with the changes in the laws and the programs that are available, hopefully that will also change. So,
okay,
we'll see.
So next episode on podcast will be Tangled. Was the film? Well, obviously, the film we get next. And pulling the curtain back because the universe did not want me to record this review. That's been recorded already with both my sister Emma and Will Ackerman, who's been on the show before. That's it for this one. Can't think of a clever way to close it out or do any.
Come on, Kristen, you're almost there.
Right. Okay, that'll do, I think.
Hello.
Gentlemen, enchanté. A tip of the hat from Dr. Facilier. How y'all doing?
Tarot readings, charms, potions, dreams made real. Ashidanza.
Were I a betting man, and I'm not, I stay away from games of chance. I'd wager I'm in the company of visiting royalty.
Lawrence, this remarkable gentleman has just read my poem.
Or this morning's newspaper. Sire, this chap is obviously a charlatan. I suggest we move on to a less...
Don't you disrespect me, little man. Don't you derogate or deride. You're in my world now, not your world. I got friends on the other side. He's got friends on the other side. That's an echo, gentlemen. Just a little something we have here in Louisiana. A little parlor trick, don't worry. Sit down at my table. Put your mind at ease. If you relax, it will enable me to do anything I please. I can read your future. I can change it around some too. I look deep into your heart and soul. You do have a soul, don't you, Lawrence? Make your wildest dreams come true. I got voodoo, I got hoodoo, I got things I ain't even tried. And I got friends on the other side.
He's got friends on the other side.
The cards, will tell. The past, the present, and the future as well. The cards, just take three. Take a little trip into your future with me. Now you, young man, are from across the sea. You come from two long lines of royalty. I'm a royal myself on my mother's side. Your lifestyle's high, but your funds are low. You need to marry a little honey whose daddy got dough. Mom and dad cut you off, huh, playboy?
Sad but true.
Now y'all gotta get hitched, but hitching ties you down. You just wanna be free, hop from place to place. But freedom takes green. It's the green, it's the green, it's the green you need. And when I looked into your future, it's the green that I seen. On you, little man, I don't wanna waste much time. You've been pushed round all your life. You've been pushed round by your mother and your sister and your brother. And if you was married, you'd be pushed round by your wife. But in your future, the you I see is exactly the man you always wanted to be. Shake my hand. Come on, boys. Won't you shake a poor sinner's hand? Yeah. Are you ready?
Are you ready?
Are you ready? Transformation Central.
Transformation Central.
Reformation Central.
Reformation Central.
Transmogrification Central. Can you feel it? You're changing, you're changing, you're changing, all right. I hope you're satisfied. But if you ain't, don't blame me. You can blame my friends on the other.